In a world where it seems like there's so much going wrong, I want you to see the people who are spending their lives doing and seeing the good. Welcome to the Doing Good Podcast, where we discuss the stories of people who are changing the world in their own way. I'm your host, Carmen Herbert. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Doing Good. And I am so thrilled to have Stephanie Ingram on the podcast today. Stephanie is married to her best friend, the amazing Greg Ingram, and she is the mama to the fabulous five Ingrams, ages 20 to 10. Stephanie considers one of her greatest accomplishments in life is that she is still alive. Does that count? She has a pacemaker and was diagnosed with pure autonomic, is that right? Failure, PAF, and has since learned to navigate the health challenges that are hers on a daily basis. Stephanie loves to speak and write and share her experiences about motherhood, mountains, and miracles. Some fun facts about Stephanie: she's obsessed with Mount Rainier in Washington State, and working out to the full instrumental theme of The Dark Knight makes her feel like she's actually becoming Batman.
You're with me in the gym, you're like, I don't know what's happening over there, but
listen, if the headphones are on, like, just we're all in our own little world, okay?
Sorry. I didn't know I wanted to be Batman, but it's just
I love that. That is, I don't even know what the full soundtrack to The Dark Knight sounds like. It must be very intense and motivating.
Super good, I guess. Yeah.
That is awesome. Well, Stephanie, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. I'm really excited to talk with you about your life story. And one of the things I love about doing this podcast is I get to just know normal, everyday people that are living life and going through enormous trials and tribulations. Some are seen, some are unseen, and how they still go about doing good, whatever life throws at them, despite life's challenges. So I was reading a little bit about you and your story, and it's just, we just have to, I don't know how we're going to talk in 30 minutes. I don't know how we're going to like narrow this down.
Because it's going to be like, stop talking, Steph.
I know. We might have to do like part one, part two. But first off, tell the listeners a little bit about you. Where did you grow up? What were some of your interests when you were a young girl?
Sure. Oh my gosh. So yeah, I grew up out west. So grew up in Utah, Colorado, New Mexico, and Oregon. And we just moved around to like these gorgeous places. My dad was a landscape architect for the Forest Service.
Oh, wow.
Be able to design like where a campground would go or where this like path would go or where the bathroom got. You know what I mean? Like a scenic outlook, like just so cool. So we
that lived in is way cool.
The coolest towns. I tell you, I'm like, oh, that was amazing. I'm so grateful that. But mountains, right? Like that was the consistent thing with all the good places was mountains.
And I'm going to interrupt you really quick. Moving around wasn't hard for you? Like was it an adventure or did you just learn to adapt? Because it sounds like you have such a positive attitude about it.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it's like, what would Stephanie say at different phases of her life, right? Yeah. Like, I'm sure 12-year-old Stephanie would answer it differently than like 15-year-old Stephanie, but for sure. I remember just having a super hard time, like just the making new friends or trying to make new friends, right? Like, again, that kind of feeling, totally just normal, right? Like hard.
Yeah.
Hard, like constantly moving. At the same time, again, this is old Stephanie speaking, but now I'm grateful because my family and I have really settled in Indiana here in the Midwest and you know, have not moved. And I'm like, oh, I'm so grateful that I got to see so much.
Yeah.
Growing up out west, right?
Or yes.
In mountains and just all the things. So for sure hard. I feel like my parents did such a good job of bringing the gospel with us wherever we went, right? And we got to experience, it's like, oh, like this is the consistent part of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And you move again, you're like, this is also the consistent part of the gospel of Jesus Christ, but this is the culture of what it looks like here. So really, like, it was a beautiful thing to be like, wow, there's the culture in a place about the church, right? And then there's, like, the concrete, like, gospel of Jesus Christ. Really cool.
Yeah. That is really cool. And I'm sure was just like that grounding, steady, like no matter where we are. I love that your parents are like, but this is what we bring with us and this doesn't change.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and as far as things to love to do, I mean, just running like outside from a young age, like I fell in love with running at like 12, 13 years old. I think the Oregon Mountains definitely helped like beckon you outside, right?
Yes.
Get outside, like you're just stunning, gorgeous areas. But daily running outside, something I absolutely love. Camping, pretty much anything outdoors. I'm extremely uncoordinated. So as far as like, in high school, that was not me. No, but I could run. So.
Well, and I bet you could run, like when you say run, like track, like did you compete?
No.
Okay.
So, no, like trail run.
Trail run.
A little older, like Married to Greg and everything like that. Like we did marathons and half marathons and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
I actually like had a job, which I sound like one of those old people. Like I, you know, walked to both Philly race and
yes.
I had a job since I was 12. Like it was like awesome to have like an after school job. Like
yes.
Everywhere I went, like I just had a job. So that left like after school sports and stuff kind of out. But
it's, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I love what running does for me. Yes. Running in the moment is so hard. But I do it like we run like as a family, like my mom and dad run marathons frequently. I do half marathons. My older sister has run a marathon. They're like, what half marathon are we doing this year? And we have to do it. We're forced into running.
So I'm always, kids would kill me. That's amazing. No, I love that.
We are. It's like, this is how we bond. So I'm like, if I want to have a good relationship, like we run together. And I mostly complain the whole time. And they're like, I know I have a heart murmur. And so it's harder for me. Like when I run, my heart rate is so like, I will look at my husband who's barely breathing hard. And I'm like, I honestly feel like it's so hard. And I know we're going to get into that with you too, like health challenges and with your heart and everything, but it really is so hard. I'm like, I feel like if my heart was whole, I'd be so much better because it's just, I can't even breathe.
Yeah. So for you, is your heart rate like higher?
So high, like 180s. So I'll be like running like a 9.5 minute, which is not for those that run, like not super fast.
No, but half marathon pace, that's.
Yes. It's still, like, that's me, like the fastest I've ever ran is like 8:40, like consistently. And so, you know, like 1:54 finish or something. Yeah. And my heart rate was consistently like 180, 185, where my husband's, he's like 160s, you know, like, so I'm like, if I were to do Orange Theory, I honestly would be so interested to see like my exertion and effort where I feel like, I don't even feel like I'm trying very hard, but my heart is just working.
Pounding out
so hard. Yes. But
is there anything you can do to fix that? Sorry, I'm like totally taking this as a tangent, but
no, there are definitely. So I have a hole in my heart. And so basically my blood, someone's going to listen to this and say, you explained that completely wrong. So I'm sorry. But as I understood it in my not very smart brain, I have a hole in my heart. And basically when my blood, it's supposed to go through your heart and circulate and clean and then go back. It comes out. And so it's harder for my blood to, for my body to like circulate that blood. And it's not, I don't even know it. It's not oxygenated or cleaned or whatever.
What?
Am I explaining that right? And so what they can do, they said, what we can do is we can put like a little plug in, and there's like a plug that you can do, and that will help with the blood not going out where it's not, it's supposed to go around your heart. Mine goes out in some areas. And then they can also like shock it. And so they said we can like deaden some of the scar tissue. So I have like arrhythmia, and so it'll like dig, 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 and then stop, and then back up again. So they're like, we can like shock, we can like deaden the heart, like put like a little bit of scar tissue. So when you're because you know, it works with electricity. So when it tries to do that weird arrhythmic thing, it'll hit a dead end circuit and then restart your heart again. But so there are little things, but so far they're like the risk of surgery is greater than the risk
than what's happening now.
So my doctor's like, if you're running half marathons, because he's like, what we would do is we would put you through a stress test and see how your heart responds. Even though it's really high, it's you're surviving it. And so they're like, if that's like what we would do. And if you're regularly running half marathons, then your heart is healthy. And the amazing thing about your heart is it can create new pathways. And so even if one of them's clogged or it's not working, running can create new pathways in your heart. And so he's like, you actually might be strengthening it, even though it's whenever I'm running, I'm like, this is good for me, right? He's like, he did say like no more than 2 hours worth of exercise at a given time, like with a consistent high heart rate, like above 150 or 60 would be too hard. So he's like, no marathons, but half is your peak. And then like hiking at a moderate pace, but no more than a half would probably be good for your heart. So
wow,
that's what I've stuck to. I know. But no, okay, enough about me.
Well, but no, I'm so grateful you told me that. Thank you. Like, man, right? Like everybody's walking around with these hearts that are like, oh my gosh, how are we gonna work? Anyway, yeah, my goodness. I'm sorry.
And it's just interesting how we can adapt to things too and what our bodies can do to, if I'm like, no, I'm going to run, my body's like, okay, well, I guess we better create some new pathways, do some things, like she's not going to stop. And so let's get into kind of what I've never heard of PAF. It's the autonomic failure, autonomic failure. So first of all, what is that?
Yes, that's super fair. So I think, so just really simply, I'll describe that part and then we can back up if we want to or whatever. But so pure autonomic failure. So in August of 2021, after a horrendous year, you know, some other diagnoses were kind of being thrown around that were like really, really scary sounding.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like a life expectancy of 2 years and you'll be like, just
oh my goodness,
kind of thing. And so we had made an appointment to go to the Mayo Clinic like back in April. And finally, after all the things, got up there in August of 21. And that's where I was officially diagnosed with, you know, if you look up online, PAF, like it won't even pull it up. Like, it's just, I think it stands for like atrial fibrillation kind of.
Oh, okay. So yours is with your heart. Okay.
Yeah. It won't even show pure autonomic failure. So basically the reason why they call it pure is because I don't have like some kind of autoimmune disease or something else causing autonomic failure.
Interesting. So, yes, it does.
Because like my brain is not sending the automatic signals to everything that you need in your body to like work. So for example, your heart beating, right? Yes. Your brain is, people with a medical license be like, she's not right. But as far as Stephanie is concerned, so my brain, right, sends the signal, hey, heart, you need to
beat. Keep beating. Yes.
It very irregularly and then just like really did not send the signal to beat for my heart. And so the pacemaker, right, has this battery, which it's the thing that's sending a consistent signal
to say,
and then my heart will beat because of the wires that are plugged in the top and the bottom part of my heart.
Amazing. So
it'll relay, right? It'll be like,
oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Pacemakers, I'm like, oh, it's like the best like security blanket other than my dog gunner of all time. It's just like, oh my gosh, right? Like, so automatic. So, I mean, every single organ in your body, every muscle, everything has to do with these automatic.
Yes.
We don't even think about like breathing, right? Like we can take a deep breath, but like the actual signal to your brain is like, open the air sacs and open the airways and breathe in, breathe out, like all the things. And so, right? Like bladder, intestines, like everything's getting automatic signals and stomach, you know. So for me, how that has shown up, I mean, I think a lot of people at least have heard of dysautonomia. I feel like it's a little more common now than 10, 15 years ago when we were very first kind of like talking about what was going on with my body. And so dysautonomia is kind of this umbrella. There's PAF in there. There's POTS. I think people have heard of POTS a lot often, right? Postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome.
Yes.
So I don't have POTS, but I'm in that umbrella too. For the most part, extremely healthy, like growing up, no health issues. Occasionally, like I would have fainting episodes, but it all seemed to stem from like overexertion or like when you're sick, right? Like my body is like, we should pass out. That would probably be a reset. Like just unconscious.
Just reset. Yeah. Go.
Body, that's okay. So when I got pregnant with my first daughter and I started passing out, like we were like, this is weird. And at the time, like, again, like doctors didn't really at the time, like 20 years ago, right? Like, approach things the same way they do now. And so it just was kind of like, eat some more food, make sure you're not, you know, you have low blood pressure, but like just eat more food and drink more water and you'll be good. So fast forward through like all five kids, put on bed rest for pretty much every single one of them. You know, my last few were like, in the hospital, like they diagnosed with like hyperemesis, which is like so much vomiting that you just live off of like IVs and TV. It's just all the things. So it's
like what you have, there's like a severe form of that when some women are pregnant, they can develop that.
That's what they kind of, I say thought. I mean, it was, it just, we didn't realize this overarching thing was happening.
Yes.
Right. So man, fast forward to 2012, 2013, and I start having these fainting episodes and symptoms outside of pregnancy, which terrified me.
Yeah.
I learned in that moment that like when you know, okay, this is going to be so hard, but there's a due date. Like there's an end date. Like I know how much time I've got to go to get to this finish line when you run a half marathon or whatever, right?
Yes, like, and I can do that. Yes.
You can train your brain to be like, 9 months.
Yeah.
You're a kid. Got it.
Yep.
So worth it. So good. Well, okay. No, again, they're worth it. I'm just kidding.
Yes.
But right. Like, so I felt terrified. Like I start having these fainting episodes and like hop around to a couple doctors and it just kind of was, at the time too, I didn't know how to advocate for myself as a patient. Like I would go in little doctor hero worship a little bit. And then they're like, you're good. Like your heart sounds fine. And I will just leave. Like fast forward again. Sorry, I'm kind of jumping around. I end up being able to go to a place called the Cleveland Clinic that's here in the Midwest. And the doctors were incredible. And they basically were like, we think you have some kind of like dysautonomia happening. Yeah. This amazing doctor, his name was Dr. Wilson. I just remember like he just took the time.
Yes.
He's really listened. And I saw a cardiologist then at that time too. And he just said, you know, if you hadn't been a runner since you were 13, I don't think your heart would be strong enough to handle how low your blood pressure is getting. Like your 12 and 13 year old self started saving yourself like decades before.
That is incredible.
So good. Right. And anyway, we could talk forever about the tour of all the ologists is what we call it.
Like the tour of the ologists.
Tour of all the ologists. Ologists. Fainting a ton. Realizing that exercise, drinking tons of water, caffeine actually helps me. It constricts your blood vessels. It increases my heart rate, which can you even have caffeine?
I can, yes. But caffeine doesn't affect me as much, which is very interesting. Like I can handle, like I'm talking like a Coke or, you know, maybe two a day and don't notice that big of a difference.
It's really, that's not like a ton. It's like what, like 60?
Like 60. I've never tried like a Monster, or I did do a 5-hour energy one time and I did half of a 5-hour when I was in Nashville and that was not good.
You're like, I was
wired. No, my body was like, no. Yeah. So yeah. I try not to drink too much of it, but that not as bad for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm very careful about which caffeine sources I put in, but you know, again, I'm just trying to help sum this up, but they were just kind of like, just keep doing what you're doing. Your actual heart muscle is so strong.
Yes.
When your blood pressure drops, your heart just like is tired and you faint. So yeah. I end up finally, after like years, again, go back, Stephanie, and advocate yourself a little bit better. But they did a tilt table test, a cardiac tilt table test, where you're like a hospital setting.
Yeah.
Right. You probably have heard of it before. Like you're on this like hospital bed, but it like stands you up.
Yes.
And you're hooked up to all the machines so they can see what's happening to your heart. And as symptoms come on, they're trying to get you to pass out so they can see in a hospital setting what's going on.
Yes.
And I pass out, of course. And I remember just waking up and there's just like a flurry of nurses and doctors and things. And this doctor just kind of leans down and looks at me and she's like, your heart stopped. Like it completely stopped for, you know, like at the time it was like 17 seconds because they were able to get me down quickly and get me going again. But they after a couple of other like things, they just said, we can assume that this, your heart was probably going into cardiac arrest with many, if not all of these fainting episodes. And at first, when I first heard the news, it was like that day or the day after, right? And I'm like, Heavenly Father, like, where were you? Like, I have been praying for help and guidance and direction on the daily, like, please help prevent these fainting episodes. And I'm like, I was like almost dying. Like, Kat, you're on this little mini massive fit that I do as an adult, right? Like, but, and then I think it was honestly like, I was going to bed that night and it just like washed over me, like, oh wait, like my heart was stopping perhaps daily with these thinking episodes, but it was also restarting.
Yes.
And I was like, oh right, like as humans we pray and we plead with Heavenly Father for these things we want so bad, right? Like these things that we are like, this is the actual solution. I'm telling you what the solution is. I'm trying to be righteous. So please give me the thing, the desires of my heart, right? It's like there's so many quote unquote scriptures to back that up. But it was such a beautiful, like just eye-opening experience to say, right, like I'm praying and I'm trying my hardest.
Yes.
And you're answering the prayers that I didn't even know I needed to ask.
Yes.
Like I didn't know I needed to be saying, hey, could you possibly restart my heart today? Like our Heavenly Father is more than just aware. Like he is the beautiful like orchestrator and divine creator of our lives. Like we are so, I say in the dark, but like we're so unaware.
Yes.
We're so unaware of the tiny, tender miracles that are happening minute by minute, right?
Yeah. Like, yes.
So, you know, I get the pacemaker in April of 2017. And the night before I'm getting my pacemaker, there's kind of all these worries, right? You're like, oh my gosh, like I'm having like this big surgery and the metal in my car and wires plugged into my actual heart, right? You're like, oh, like there's these metal prongs and you're like, what's the risk?
Very of like Iron Man. Very Iron Man vibes.
No, it's like you Google search it, which you never should. And WebMD is probably going to die. Like probably not even going to.
Yeah, but
anyway, the night before, and again, man, I have so many of these like moments where, because somehow I'm able to feel like that spirit, like, and it just kind of washes out everything. And I hear very clearly some things. And a lot of times for me, that comes through like a quote from a conference talk that I've been listening to, or a scripture, or another quote from some other amazing wise human, right? But I just remember Mary Oliver's little quote taken from an excerpt of one of her poems, but it just said, tell me what it is that you plan to do with your one wild and precious life.
And I love that quote. I love that quote.
Like how lucky am I that I actually get this, like, I know what it feels like to be sick every single day and not be able to do these things on my bucket list, or like, I mean, it was like, so much thinking, right? It's like I drag my kids to their like soccer games. They go out and start to play. I'm laying, passing out in the car from just the drive. I get out. It's just, oh, man, it was a lot, right?
And it's scary when you're like, what if that happens when I'm driving? What if that happens when I'm behind the wheel? Yeah.
Thankfully, like I had warnings, like, but it totally happened while I was driving where I had to just like all of a sudden on the interstate, I'm pulling over and I'm laying my seat back to get as horizontal as I can so I can pass out and then get blood flow to control. But anyway, crazy. I wake up from this pacemaker surgery and I'm like, there's literally like a whole life to live. And I'm so.
Yes.
So one of the things that I desperately wanted to do that I had always wanted to do, which I don't even know where this like idea like was birthed from, but I just hiking the Wonderland Trail in Washington State around Mount Rainier. It's 95 miles and it's just like, you just go around the mountain, right? Like up, like there's no flat. There's zero flat trail. Like you're on this beautiful trail and it's just, you're going to straight up or straight down. Like it's just.
Oh
it's,
my goodness.
I'm like, that's what I'm going to do. Cause I'm like,
you're like, that's what I want. That's what
I'm invincible. I'm going for it. I literally train. I run a half marathon. Like I do all these different things to like train and get going on. Yeah. This dream of mine, my sweet dad, who's just mountain man to the max. My husband's like, no, you can't actually hike the whole thing by yourself. But I'm like, but I should and I can and I want to. But anyway, my dad was like my car support. So there's a couple places around Mount Rainier that you can drive into. There's a parking lot and you can camp there. So anyway, long story short, my dad met me at these like different spots around the mountain. So he was there. I had somebody local, right?
That is amazing.
I had a spot GPS that my husband could track me the whole time. I couldn't like really communicate, like, but we had these pre-recorded messages that I could like text basically and an SOS button. So yeah. Day four, I mean, it really is like, I'm still talking about it because it was life-changing. Like it was so.
Were you like camping by yourself at night during this? Oh my gosh, Stephanie. I'm imagining like. It was like a day trip. Like how long did this take you?
Okay, so that's the other kind of funny part. So that's like being alone in the mountains, I highly recommend it. Like it's just, it's incredible. It really is like super profound. So anyway, I'm hiking along having this amazing experience. I could talk forever about it. But on day four, to answer your question, originally, I have all these kids, right?
And yes.
My husband already had like this mission trip. He's a dentist. This dental mission trip planned. And so when I was looking at dates to try to like reserve a spot, like anyway, I only had 5 days to like do it. And I was like, oh, I can totally do that. I'm invincible. I have a pacemaker. Like this is so great. I'll just train super hard and hike with a backpack like for 5 days around Mount Rainier, you know? And it's like, that included my travel days too. And so it was kind of intense. Like it was like a lot, but anyway. Well,
and why did you want to do that by yourself and not with anyone? Like were you sleeping by yourself at night? Was your dog with you? Like
no dogs are allowed like on the Wonderland Trail. And let's just, I guess, point out too, like I'm in Indiana where it's like the flattest.
Yes.
Like, it's like, it's completely flat. So
yes.
Right. Like it's just I crave the mountains like so much that I'm like, that is like my happy place. I mean,
okay.
My family and all the things, right?
Too. Yes.
Because like, oh my gosh, it's so good. And there's something really, so logistics kind of led to me also doing it alone, right? Because just getting like your camping stuff and your backpack and all that kind of stuff out west, training for it. Like it just, I think I just was in a phase of life where it was like, okay, like I don't have anyone that like can or maybe wants to or whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
I probably had people that wanted to do it with me. But I think the other thing that's interesting about solo hiking, something really physically demanding like that is, I remember as I was hiking, I was thinking, I am so grateful I'm alone because I'm literally like on my hands and knees, like crawling up this like super steep part. Not that I cared what people were like cared what I look like, but I had the thought, there's no way I could have the emotional energy to motivate anybody else to follow me at this.
Oh, no. Yes, for sure.
If I had talked one of my friends or sisters or sister, somebody into doing this with me, I would have been like, I'm so sorry. Like,
yes, please. I can't talk and I can't talk to you.
There was lots of times where I was like, I'm so grateful I'm alone because I don't have to feel like I pressured anybody into wanting to like not do this. Anyway, yeah.
Tell me how many hours would you hike a day? And then where would you camp? Were you scared of bears and wild animals eating you in your sleep? Like, honestly.
No, I was not scared at all. Okay.
Oh,
so here's what you do. I just am like, I want the world to do this, but I also know like it's a lottery pick. Like actually it's really ironic because I have applied for a lottery spot to hike the Wonderland Trail every year since, 2018. And I've never gotten another one. So I'm like, it was meant to be. Like,
Oh my gosh.
Like, it's super hard to actually get. So basically back in like March of 2018, I looked at what days I could be gone, which was 5 days. And I was like, okay, that means I have, I flew out on. Yeah. So I was like, okay, these are the four campsites that I have, like, that's all I have, And so I flew in, drove to Mount Rainier, put my pack on, met my dad, hugged him hello and goodbye, and then just started hiking. And so it's you know exactly where your campsite is before you.
Okay.
There.
Okay.
And everything is very, it's so pristine and gorgeous. As you're hiking, you're like, I wouldn't want to just randomly.
Yes.
In this spot, because it everything is so gorgeous. Oh my gosh. But
are there other people doing it too? Or were you all alone? Like, people on the trail?
That's what feels really weird, is because you're like, I know this is a lottery pick, which means that every day at the time that I did it in 2018, every day there's 100 campsites available.
Okay.
Some of them are group sites. So, number wise, I don't know how many humans are out there hiking, because it could, right? But I rarely saw anybody.
Interesting.
And so what I did was I just kind of looked at my very first day there, again, flying from Midwest to Pacific Northwest, it's a 3-hour time change, all that kind of stuff. It's 8 hours kind of to fly, connect, and fly to, right? So by the time I get there and I start hiking, it's already 2 p.m. local time, which is 5 p.m. my time, right? Anyway. So I just kind of would always look at when does the sun rise and when does the sun set? And I would tack on an hour onto both of those so that I would already kind of be moving and hiking. And because I wanted to give myself as much time as I possibly could to just enjoy it, right?
Yeah.
At the same time, I was like, okay, I know I have to I say fast hike it. There's people that hike it in 3 days, or they, people that run it in 24 hours, just amazing. But with your pack, my pack was 45 pounds.
Oh my gosh, that is really heavy.
So heavy. But I tried so hard, but it was the night before I'm packing, and my husband's I've done some research. I had done so much research, read.
Yeah.
Blocks and all the things, learned about bear etiquette. You learn all the things you need to. Anyway, again, I could talk about this forever, but let's see. Yeah, I just would try and say, okay, Stephanie, you have 14 hours of daylight. So, my first day ended up hiking. Well, I hiked 13 and a half miles. The next day was a 24-mile day. I think the next one was a 26-mile day. My math I should have written this down. But anyway, each day, it was heavy mileage, but at the same time, you're like, okay, that's 2 miles per hour, which they kind of say with a pack is kind of a great-ish
pace. It is. Well, so my mom and dad do rim to rim. And a good friend of mine, he's my boy's doctor. He does rim to rim to rim, and he runs it. And what's, and that's 26 miles, I think, 24, 26 rim to rim. And mm-hmm. so, but it's like you go, it's like 7 miles down, 7 miles across, and like 7-8-ish, like back up, which is the hardest. Mm-hmm. And then, but that's, and you do it in a day. It's, but an entire day. So I can't imagine, like I did 26 miles one day and then you turn right back around and then do another 14 or 26 yeah. all in a row. Like that oh, is hard, hard. That's hard. Work.
What's crazy is like, and you can probably relate to this too, is it's like once you, when you've been sick or when you've like
yeah
struggled with the day in and day out of something, right? And then not to say that like I hadn't struggled with things, but like you have this like, oh my gosh, it just feels so good to live.
Yes.
Like so good to be out doing these amazing good things that I
yes and right? feeling your body do hard things. Oh, yes.
Yes. I'm yeah. like, great, hard, perfect, physically yeah. hard. Let's go do it, you know? And
yeah.
When I finally the hardest day actually was my very first day because I still wasn't fully convinced that I could do it.
Yeah.
So it's like I had you know, and I mean, again, I could talk about this forever. The training yes. schedule that I had, all the things that I tried to do to like recreate mountains.
Yes. Yeah. Right. I know. Walking up on your treadmill. Yes.
Yes. But I finally get into my camp. Like one of the things I was really, really scared of was night hiking.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and the beautiful thing about the Wonderland Trail too is like, there's no like, for the most part, like offshoots, like you can't like get lost.
That's good. That's
it is
good.
So well maintained. You're like on it and you're like, this is all I have to do.
And this is all I have to do. Yeah.
For the most part. I do have a story about kind of getting lost. I wasn't, but I thought I was. But anyway, so I just remember getting in my first night, like, and just like, you know, it's like nighttime and I had been hiking for an hour in the dark and I had my headlamp for my husband that he'd given me and I get my tent set up and I'm like crawl in there and I just all the things and I like lay down and I just remember like laying there and I had this like urge to just like wrap my like arms around myself, which sounds really, really cheesy and corny, but I was like, I love you for doing this. Like, thank you for doing this hard thing. Like, this is so good. I'm so proud of you. And I don't know that I've ever like said that to myself before, right? Like profound moments of like, yes, it's so hard, but it's so good. Like you can't live without experiencing that. Like, oh, I'm so proud of you for fighting through today, right? Like,
yeah, it's just,
oh, so good. So anyway, day four, having the best time of my life. I'm finishing up my day. This was like my longest day and I had my dad basically was like, hey, why don't I take your heavy pack for the day? Just take like this running pack basically that has some emergency supplies and your spot GPS and water and
yeah,
just go for it. And so that was really, I had one day where I had like dropped the heavy pack.
Awesome.
I was able to run during parts of it and it just was like awesome. The next day, I only had like 10 miles to wrap up and then fly home. Like,
yeah.
So day four, I'm already feeling this like, oh my gosh, it's almost over. And I'm so sad. Like, I don't want it to be over, you know? And I come up over this like huge mountain and I'm kind of coming down into this valley. It's on something called the Cowlitz Divide is where I was. And if anyone listening knows where Mount Rainier, the Wonderland Trail is, but Cowlitz Divide. And unbeknownst to me, I mean, I think the world knew that like California that summer had like been on fire, like
yes.
wildfires, right?
Yes.
None really like that Stephanie was aware of in Washington State that there had been, but it had just been dry. It had just been so dry, which I'm so used to the Midwest. It's like the ground is soaked with water, right?
Yeah.
Like yes. it's always wet here. Like yes. that's not. But, and that was the other funny thing is I would like pass people once in a while and they're like, it's so hot. And I'm like,
no, you don't know hot. This is dry heat.
Not humid. So I yeah. feel this is good. Yeah. So coming down, I've got 4 miles. I'm meeting my dad at a place called Fox Canyon. And I feel this like like rock like hit my shoulder, and I'm like, that's so weird. And I'm actually running it this time. I wasn't running the whole thing, but I was running it this time. And then I like feel another one, and I'm like, oh, that's hail. That is so weird. And I look up, and it's a blue sky, and I'm like, I had blue sky, and it's like the entire time, like not a cloud in the sky. But that is, how am I getting hailed on? And there's no, I'm like, I guess mountains, like you're just up high and whatever, right? So all of a sudden, everything kind of happened in like a millisecond. Like I'm running on the path, like down. And then I see like this like crazy bright flash of like light, like right in my eyes. And then I actually, like I passed out, like I was unconscious. And I remember waking up thinking, wait, like what went wrong? Like with my pacemaker, like, right? Like so many things happening all at once. Again, I could talk about it forever, but quickly realized lightning had struck a tree about 3 feet-ish away from me. The impact of just that electricity and like the pounding of the ground, like knocked me unconscious. Fast forward, nothing happened to my pacemaker.
Which that
we didn't know, but actually hit me. My doctor was like, you'd be like a fried circuit board. Like,
yes.
Well, there's like metal in your heart. Like,
yes.
So like 3 feet, right? Like away. Anyway, I'm kind of jumping around, but it starts a forest fire. So that's the most like terrifying thing. Like everything's burning. I wake up, I start running the opposite direction of where I need to go. It's hard to try to figure out how to sum this up, but I decide to stop about a mile away because I'm out of water. And one of my themes, even with the pacemaker, like if I am not consistently drinking, especially with that kind of physical exertion.
Yes.
If I'm not drinking a ton of water and electrolytes, I'm going to pass out.
Yeah.
It's totally going to happen. Right. And so I realized really quickly, like, I'm not going to be able to run my way all the way to this water source, which is like 6 miles away. And I'm thinking California wildfire kind of like, and I'm totally inexperienced. I'm like, I don't know how fast or high or where, like.
Yeah, where the fire is going to spread. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, so I end up pushing my SOS button because I'm like, I don't know what's coming and I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and I didn't know this part, but my husband, it contacts, so spot GPS, you hit the SOS button, they contact search and rescue. Search and rescue contacts the emergency contact, which is my husband, right?
Oh. He gets
this phone call and they're like, hey, Stephanie has initiated her SOS. I don't know why I'm getting emotional, but like, how would you like us to proceed? And instead of being this tender moment, he's like, no, like, don't go look for her. Let me try to call her dad. We're fine. But like, we've like had a lot of funny conversations about it.
Yeah.
Like, no, don't go save her.
Don't go save her. She was probably in a panic.
Probably shouldn't be pushing that.
She was emotional. Yeah.
So,
no, I almost got hit by lightning and there's a forest fire, but yeah, I guess I'm a little emotional about that.
Know that. You don't know that there's a forest fire, but you know, she's high drama. But anyway, what feels like an eternity, like I just keep what I pictured actually was like, okay, like this is going to sound so dumb, but in Hunger Games when like Katniss is like basically burning and like deadish, and they come in and they scoop her body up. And then,
yes, and the fire. Yeah.
Like, the forest fire is coming. Like,
the helicopter will get me out. Yeah.
Just take me out. My adventure's over. Like, and the helicopter's not coming, and I'm super ticked. And I'm like, Heavenly Father, for real, this is actually an emergency. Like, I know I'm supposed to be patient, but like, this is like has to happen right now. Like, I need a helicopter right.
Yeah.
Like, not later. Like, I'm going to burn. And so, again, like time is, I could talk forever about this, but like time passes and I'm literally just running around in circles, scream crying, like just like pacing, like trying to be like, what do I do? Where do I go? And what happened on my husband's end is he told them no. He got off the phone. He called my kids into the house and he said, I don't know what's happening, but your mom really needs our help right now. And he gathered, you know, our little family together, and they said a prayer, and they just said, "We don't know what's wrong, but please send mom like what she needs." And on my end, I feel this like drop of water like hit my shoulder, and then another drop, and then I see all these little bits of water like hitting the ground, and it's like my brain is like so panicked, it like wasn't like registering. And then all of a sudden, like I'm feeling like just like rain, like on my head and on my shoulders.
Oh, wow, that is
my backpack. And I'm, you know, it's like soaking the ground around me. And I realize, like, wait, this is rain. Like, this is full on like a downpour rain. And I even had the thought, like, this is not like a little mountain like shower.
Yeah.
This is an Indiana downpour kind of summer rain.
Yeah.
You know, unbeknownst to me at the time, like it was like sent from my family, right? Like, anyway, it just, again, one of these like ushering of like quiet, like hushings of my crazy brain where Heavenly Father's like, okay, like you actually like didn't need the helicopter. Like, I know you wanted it and you wanted rescued right then.
Yeah.
But all you had to do was be super patient because I have a plan for you, and it just includes rain. Like, I'm gonna take care of you. Like, I'm gonna take care of you. Like, I will absolutely take care of you. It's gonna come in the ways that he knows we need rescued, right? Like, anyway, finished the hike. It was amazing. It was life changing and so good. Wow, that was really long.
That was an incredible story, Stephanie. But it's so beautiful that I love that you talk about being rescued in the way that you need to be rescued. And we do. There are so many times where it's like, well, why don't you just fix my heart? Like, you can just fix it too. Like, why did I have to get a pacemaker? And why couldn't you have sent a helicopter? Instead, he sent the rain. And how come you didn't just make me stop fainting? Instead, he just restarted your heart when you did. And I love all these analogies of just thinking that this is what we need when Heavenly Father's like, I know what's going to happen and I have a plan for you. And sometimes it's going to be hard and it's going to be heartbreaking and it'll turn out in a way that you didn't anticipate or want, but
yeah.
He is aware of us and he knows us and he knows how to help us in better ways. And it might not look like what we want or need. Well, for sure what we need, but what we want, but even if we have to go through really scary, difficult, hard things, that he's there. And I love these tender mercy and experiences that you've shared. And I do. I feel like I could talk to you forever about, like, I'm like, wait, I need to know, like, how you are now. What are you doing now? And so, honestly, we probably should just do a part two and say, okay, now we need to just talk more about
how, you know, I just old Mount Rainier, right? And I've thought about these different experiences, and I think what's really amazing and beautiful is that you're right. Like, he, of course, he has this ability to come in and fix everything. He is the right. Like, I want to find the quote before I really butcher it, but just, he really truly came to do the impossible.
Yeah.
And when we're up as humans against our own impossible things, we're like, oh, okay, like I have enough faith. Ready, go. Right. Yeah. So many times I've looked back at these experiences and I'm so grateful that they're mine. Like, I just am like, thank you for loving me enough to help me become more and become ready to see the miracle. If it happens just like that, or just the way that we like designed or planned or whatever for ourselves, it's, at least in my own life, I'm realizing like, oh my gosh, I miss it all. I miss the miracle, right? Like, you know, and our sweet dog passed away last week, and my kids, like, their prayers were like, please, please heal our dog. Like, please hear our prayers. Please heal Gunner that he can be okay. You know, and as the week has gone on, like, the amount of like tender experiences that they've had in like looking for little like gunner things in the sky, or like their prayers are beautiful. Like, just thank you for our time with Gunner. Like the gratitude and the depth of their prayers, which we can say as humans, like, that's so unfair. Like, I'll love you, Heavenly Father. You don't have to put me through all this stuff, but like, it's who we become, right? That,
yeah,
this becomes
absolutely.
Oh, so there's actually this really awesome quote. It's by Rainer Maria Rilke. She says, "So don't be frightened, dear friend, if a sadness confronts you larger than you have ever known, casting its shadow over all you do. You must think that something is happening within you. And remember that God has not forgotten you. He holds you in his hand and will not let you fall. Why would you want to exclude from your life any uneasiness, any pain, any depression, since you don't know what work they are accomplishing within you?"
Oh, wow. That is so good. And it is. It's when you look back on your life, and when I look back on the experiences and trials and the wishing for things to have been different, now that I'm on the other end of it, I actually would not change the growth and the faith that I have now from those really hard experiences. And that, I think that's the hardest, is when you're in them, you're like, take it away. I can't do it.
It's excruciating, right? It's excruciating.
It breaks you open. But the faith and insight and love and empathy and all the things, just the resilience that you develop from the really hard things. I'm like, would I take that away from my children? Do I want... I read a quote, I think it was Brooke Romney. She's like, do you want happy children or do you want strong children? And she's like, when you just pray, please bless them to be happy. Or you can say, please bless that when hard times come, they will be better for it and they'll be stronger for it. And it's like, please bless that nothing bad will happen. Or please bless when bad things happen, they will have the strength to overcome. And I'm like, yes, of course, that's what you want. Absolutely. It's like, if that's what you want, then you have to go through it.
But can we keep our dog? Like, that would be bargaining, right?
I know.
Yes, said, some mortals say of some temporal suffering, no future bliss can make up for this. Not knowing that heaven once attained will work backwards and turn even that agony into a glory. And the blessed will say, we have never lived anywhere except heaven.
Oh, my goodness. C.S. Lewis just... He just does it differently. Like, I adore C.S. Lewis. There's just no one that can, like, just touch your heart in a way. Like,
you said all the words. That's it. That's the one. Yeah.
Stephanie, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today and to share your beautiful, amazing experiences. If people are like, okay, I want to learn more about her story. Do you have Instagram? Do you have Facebook? Like you said, that you're in your bio, you speak. How can they get a hold of you?
Yes. And we can pause this if we want to. I kind of had to, because I had like kind of masterminded the algorithm of Instagram to give me all dog. Like, I only have dogs and like spiritual stuff on my feed. And
yes.
I have to take a break. Like, I'm so heartbroken from missing one. So yes, it's just Stephanie D. Ingram. I just deactivated it, but tell me and I can.
Okay. Perfect. And that's the thing, is it absolutely, like, having time to grieve is so necessary. And by the time listeners are hearing this, it will be a few more weeks out. And when you're ready,
home. I'm like, I have to turn it back on because I need to announce that this amazing girl's coming home, right?
Yes.
I'm like, I'll turn it back on. And two, I need desperate help on this, but I've got a 40,000 page document of trying to write this story. Because I love it, right? But it's so, you can tell. And I don't know how to, anyway. I need someone to be like, leave this part out. Keep this.
Yes. You just need a really brutal editor to say, here's the meat. And keep some of the beautiful, fun things. But because your story is incredible. And so many people would benefit from it being told. So, okay, any editors out there that want to.
Right. I literally like don't know how to.
We'll find someone for you. We are going to find someone because it really is an amazing story. Thank you for talking with me today, Stephanie, and for all the good you are doing.
Thank you. So good meeting you.
Carmen Herbert, and I'm so excited to tell you about an amazing app that my whole family loves. It's called Our Turtle House, and it's full of literally thousands of hours of full-length talks, just like the old talk on CDs or talk on tapes, from some of your favorite Latter-day Saint speakers like John By the Way, Mick Johnson, Hank Smith, me, and a ton more. Plus, there's podcasts, firesides, devotionals, come follow me resources, and entertaining content your whole family will enjoy, truly, all in one little app. And you can use promo code DOINGGOOD, all one word, at checkout, and you get a full month free. So check it out and sign up at ourturtlehouse.com. See you soon.